KYW News Radio original podcasts.
This is the rundown for Monday, April 26, 2021. After saying better safe than sorry a couple of weeks ago, the CDC says that the Johnson & Johnson one-shot COVID vaccine is indeed safe. But now we have a different problem, and we'll talk about that today on The Rundown.
It's called The Rundown.
There is still a desire to get vaccinated, but I think we are getting really close to the point where we're going to be trying harder to find people.
The really sad part is that the system worked. They want it to be as safe as possible. That's why they paused.
You have the concern of saying, look, we're going into this community with this shot because it's easier for us to get to you. And that community now may say, why are you giving us the one that has all the problems?
From KYW News Radio.
This is The Rundown. I'm J. Scott Smith, and we're joined today by KYW News Radio's Suburban Bureau Chief, Jim Bellward. Jim, good to have you on here on this Monday.
Hey, Jay.
And we also welcome in KYW's Matt Leon. He's an anchor and reporter here at KYW News Radio. Plus, he's the host of KYW News Radio In Depth, along with One-on-One with Matt Leon. Matt, good to see you today.
Good to be back.
So a lot of vaccine news came in the last few days, especially over the weekend. And it's kind of a good news, bad news scenario. So we can kind of start on the good news side of things. The CDC says that Johnson & Johnson's one-shot vaccine can start to be administered again. They hit the play button after hitting the pause button on Friday evening. Now, the vaccine was paused for a couple of weeks after a handful of women developed serious blood clots. So, Jim, I think at the time it seemed like, okay, on one hand, it's great that health agencies wanted to err on the side of caution by stopping this thing. But on the other hand, we were talking about at the time six, I think it was up to 15, but 15 out of nearly 7 million people who developed this serious side effect. Is that basically what the CDC was seeing when they decided to pause the vaccine just to investigate it?
Yeah, it was six when they hit the pause button. And then one of their concerns after they hit pause and had that initial meeting was that once they put that word out there, that they would get a flood of people saying like, oh, wait, I have that too. And it would go up significantly. It ended up being 15, so still not a huge amount of people, you know, or a high risk. And you know what they've said in the meeting on Friday, it was a 6-hour meeting, I believe. So a long meeting, a lot of discussion, and the bulk of that discussion, well, two things. Number one, it wasn't do we start using it again? Like, that was almost a given going into the meeting that they wanted to start using it again. The conversation was more, what is our messaging? Are we going to just recommend, just say, we recommend that everyone can use this? Are we going to put a warning on it? What's that warning going to say? That's what a lot of the discussion was. And then the other part of that was what we're talking about now is, what about the hesitancy? What about people who are concerned about this? I wish I could say who said this. I don't remember who it was now, so I can't properly attribute it. But basically, it's sort of a paradox that the system worked. I mean, it caught something that was only happening with six people and was significant enough that it could cause death, but it was only six people. And they caught it like that, and they were able to shut everything down and hit pause and figure out what was going on. So that's definitely a concern. But, you know, the way that they kind of look at it is, yeah, this is a positive, guys. We caught something that could have been really dangerous.
So, Matt, in retrospect, what do you think about the move to pause the vaccine? Was it necessary to investigate and play it safe, or did it possibly end up unnecessarily scaring a few people?
Yes, I think this is it's an incredibly difficult needle to thread. You're trying to balance public health against the vaccine hesitancy, and you're trying to do it all on the run. In retrospect, and I say this having the responsibility for no one on my hands, they may have been better off saying, hey, we've seen this. We're investigating. At this point, we don't think it's necessary to stop using it or anything. I think that might have been a little better track to go, because I also think, if I remember correctly, when they made the decision to stop, it kind of came out kind of weird. Like, it broke on Twitter, and then there was the meeting an hour later, and then they said they wanted to have the meeting to talk about they wanted the pause to give guidance on how to address the blood clots, how to treat them. And I think if you kind of lead with that, it makes it a little easier. I think the way it came out, it gave a lot of people who were on the fence a reason to point to say, nope, see, told you, not going to happen for me. They're not telling us everything. So incredibly difficult decision. I probably think they would have been a little better leaning into, we're going to look into this. We'll keep bringing you the information, but for right now, keep using it.
And that was part of the initial meeting when the ACIP is the group, the advisory committee for CDC. And that was what Matt just said was a big part of that first meeting after the pause was announced, the discussion of, did we do what we need to do? Now that we have this out there, the blood clotting drug that's often used is heparin. And with this, the combination of the blood clots and a low platelet count, heparin could be really dangerous. And so not only did you need to get the message out to people that they might have these symptoms, but also to the health providers. So what Matt was saying, a lot of people, or not a lot of people, obviously, because they didn't vote, but there were several voices on the call of that 15-member board saying, like, look, we did what we needed to do. We paused, we got everyone's attention, but then there were more people who felt they still needed to wait a week or more to get as much data as possible. And again, to make sure that more of those cases didn't come trickling in, you know, over the next week. So they extended the pause through last Friday before they lifted it.
So we mentioned good news, bad news, and it looks like the days of not being able to find a vaccine appointment are over. Now, Jim, you would think this sounds like a good thing because we've had a number of episodes where we talked about how people were struggling to find an appointment. It was basically people trying to drive 3 hours away. It was hard to find a shot for months. And now you've got them at pharmacies 5 minutes away. People aren't driving 3 hours. And you're almost running into the opposite end of the spectrum where now the supply is kind of outpacing the demand. So why, Jim, do you feel that we're looking at this kind of a slowdown in demand? And I'm thinking we're not going to have people where they just suddenly no one wants to get a vaccine. What are we looking at here going forward?
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far to say that supply is outpacing demand, at least down here in the southeastern part of Pennsylvania, in our region. I think it's on par with, you know, the appointments are still for the most part being filled. You can find appointments, not to say that, you know, every appointment is booked out. So I do think there is still a desire to get vaccinated, but I think we are getting really close to the point where we're going to be, and I don't want to say begging people because that sends the wrong message, but we're going to be trying harder to find people. And one of the interesting, I think we talked about this last week here, one of the interesting things is some providers had started teaming up with high schools because Pfizer is 16 and up. So they were teaming up with high schools and getting that 16 and up, and then also other members of high school communities. I talked to a provider today who through a high school, they were told to expect between 1,000 and 1,500 people. They got about 200. So I don't have enough information to make any leaps, but there are things that you can start wondering about. There is, have these 16 and ups, have they found it somewhere else? So the schools didn't get the amount of interest that they thought they were going to get because they already got it. Or is this, are kids that age looking at this as an old person disease and thinking, well, I mean, look, we were all in our late teens and early 20s at one point, and it makes me terrified to think my kids might do some of the things that I did because I was immortal. I mean, everybody is at that age, right? So is there just not a concern? You know, is it, well, you know, this disease isn't going to get me. The other side of that is that's where we're seeing a lot of the growth in cases is in that age group. And again, you know, we were all that age, and you can only imagine being a 19-year-old, 18-year-old, you know, 17-year-old for a year being told you can't hang out with your friends. And they're getting to the point now where they're stir crazy. And so whatever the reason is that group, that maybe there isn't the interest level in that group, I think that needs to, that's one of the key issues that needs to be addressed and try to start encouraging them to get their shot.
And if I can steal an analogy or a euphemism from my covering basketball career, I think we're getting close to the point where we're going to switch from zone to man to man, where you're going to see us, the mass vaccination sites are going to close up. And I don't mean like this week, but in general, and this fight will now be taken where it's one-on-one with your doctor, one-on-one with your pharmacist, your best friend, whatever, who's going to start converting people. Because just anecdotally, I've done interviews. I just did a series of interviews last week with a group of people who have been vaccinating people in South Jersey. And they all have stories of people who, you know, brought somebody to get vaccinated and they were on the fence or against it. And they were able to talk to them and talk them through it and convince them that they were able to do that. And I've heard stories about that in several other areas, reading art. When you get to the one-on-one, a lot of people, now there's a group that's never going to be convinced. Like they're just hardened in their beliefs, whether it's political, you know, medical, whatever. But I think there's a lot of people that can be nudged to get the shot if they have a conversation with somebody they trust. And that's going to be the long slog, I think, you know, probably once we get into at least mid-May or so, where you're not going to have these huge vaccination numbers every day. It's just going to be this trickle of people that are able to be pushed over the finish line being convinced to do it.
And that's a great point, because also another reason that you might not be seeing, you know, the 16 to, you know, say 25 or even maybe 30, because you had to jump through so many hoops to find it. But when it's at your CVS and you're in there buying, you know, shampoo and you're like, oh, they have the shot, why don't I get it while I'm here, you know, then maybe you are more likely to get it. And what Matt said, here in Pennsylvania, they have, I want to say, about 1,700 providers signed up. And right now I think they're using in the neighborhood of 300 of those providers. And that was actually cut down, you know, when they were having a lot of issues with supply, they actually cut that way down. They cut the list of providers way down. One of the requirements in Pennsylvania is you have to be able to get out 80% of what you get within 7 days. And if you don't, they can cut your supply. So as providers order, they have to keep that in mind. And what we're expecting to see and what the state has talked about, what the State Department of Health has talked about, is as more providers ask for less allocation each week, they expect to be able to give that to more people so that more CVSs or your doctor's office or whatever, it's just around in more places. And then you're going to see what you know what we're talking about, where it's just easier to get. It's not a matter of scheduling an appointment and, you know, searching online for hours or even searching online at all. You just are somewhere and it's there and, oh, hey, I'll get it while I'm here kind of thing.
Now we think about this in hindsight, where we've had the numerous episodes, as I mentioned, where we were talking about how we couldn't get the supply in there and it was very selective. And even once the supply started to pick up, it was still kind of certain groups and certain criteria. Matt, I'll start with you. Could people have gotten vaccinated a little quicker if, say, maybe they opened it up a little sooner, didn't make it seemingly so criteria must be met with age or certain health issues? If they just said, all right, you're 16 and over a month ago or 6 weeks ago, would this have changed anything in your mind?
It may have, but I think the cost would have been too great, because you would have had more people getting sick and dying that are older, not as computer savvy. You know, would we have a higher number vaccinated? Quite possibly, but would the death toll, the hospitalization toll be higher? Probably, because you would just have a lot of people that maybe wouldn't have the ability to get in, because so many people that live their life online would have taken all the appointments. And I'm sure there would have been a course correction where they would have set up services to help people. But I think the way, for the most part, it was done with people 65 and older, comorbidities. Now, of course, there's always the, you know, why are smokers in New Jersey allowed to get it? Like, nothing's going to be perfect, but I think it would have been better for the numbers, worse for the human cost.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there was a reason that they went in the order that they went in, based on, you know, the groups that were most at risk, not only for death, but also for severe disease. Of all the issues, I think that would be at the bottom of the list. I think they could have done, you know, especially in Pennsylvania, doing a centralized list, a lot of the other things that we talked about. Again, narrowing that provider list so that you had, you know, a pharmacy getting like 100 shots when they had 8,000 people trying to sign up for those 100 shots. So if you'd centralized that supply and directed people to a more centralized supply, yes, you may have waited a bit longer, but you would have been able to sign up and know that you had an appointment. So of all the issues, it might be easy to say now they could have opened it up a little earlier, but I think they did that well, because if they had opened it up too much earlier, then you would have gotten that demand glut that we saw when they opened it. I think they were premature in Pennsylvania and opening up to 65 plus with the other health issues. I think they did that too soon. They should have gotten through more of 75. Philadelphia didn't do that. And I think that's one reason, we'll never know for certain, but I think one reason that Philadelphia ended up being a little more smooth, running a little more smoothly, was because they didn't just throw open the doors to 65 plus. They got through the 75 plus before they opened it up. So I think Pennsylvania was pretty on target with their timeline.
Now, all this conversation started over Johnson & Johnson getting paused, and it came at kind of a interesting point. There are probably a lot of people who didn't want to go to the mass vaccination sites, as Matt has mentioned. You don't want to go to these high school gyms and all these other things. You want to be able to get that one shot, go one and done. It's good for people who live in rural areas, the ones who can't get around as much, and you probably don't want to be running back and forth to get two doses. But this new poll that's out from ABC News and the Washington Post this morning, Johnson & Johnson took a major hit off of this. Only one in four people who haven't gotten vaccinated actually want to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine now. Matt, that brings us to kind of a difficult crossroads, where there should be this whole group of people now that J&J is back. But I'm wondering about what you think of that poll. And has public opinion of this Johnson & Johnson vaccine really been damaged by this?
Oh, I think it's been damaged, no question about it. But I also think, with the caveat, a lot of the people that will point and say, "I told you so," probably weren't going to get the shot in the first place. So I think there was damage pushed to a lot of people who were looking for any excuse to not get it. And that pause, I think, gave them the excuse. And the really sad part is that the system worked. Like, people are telling you how safe it is. They want it to be as safe as possible. That's why they paused. But it kind of comes back to the earlier discussion of weighing what this is going to do to public confidence against, and I don't want to, it's easy to say it's only six people, it's only 15 people, unless one of those people is your wife or your mother, then all of a sudden, when you're kind of weighing all that, that's why I would have maybe tried to find any way to keep investigating, but not pausing as long, because I think it did do damage.
I sat in the CDC press briefing, the two ACIP hearings, the two committee hearings, hours and hours and hours. And I'll tell you what, I've already gotten my shots, but if I could go back and I didn't have them, I would still in a heartbeat do Johnson & Johnson for a couple of reasons. First off, you remove the hassle of getting that second shot. The other one, the even more important one for me, I did Moderna. It took 6 weeks from my first shot until I was fully vaccinated. And if you do Johnson & Johnson, that's 2 weeks. But the challenge that you're going to run into here, building on what Matt was just talking about, one of the benefits of Johnson & Johnson are the harder to reach populations, the more vulnerable populations, and in some cases, the less well-off populations. So now you have the concern of saying, look, we're going into this community with this shot because it's easier for us to get to you. And that community now may say, why are you giving us the one that has all the problems? And they're fair to say that, but it's going to be a policy issue that I'm glad I don't have to deal with, but that people are going to have to deal with. And not even the more, the less well off, but look at colleges and universities right now. If they're trying to vaccinate people now that it's open to 16 plus, it's April 26th. When's college over? When do these kids go home? Are they going to be there in 4 weeks? Are you going to give them their first dose of Moderna and tell them, okay, when you get home, make sure you get your second shot? Whereas with Johnson & Johnson, you can just get them all now before they go. And then, with who knows what boosters are going to look like. But, then when you're getting kids back in August, at least you know that you're ahead of the curve because you got all your students before they left back in April. But, what do you do now?
Now, a lot of doctors and virologists are saying that it's going to be tougher and tougher for this country to get to herd immunity, to your point of getting people vaccinated, especially the college students, everybody else. What are your reactions to the thoughts that this pandemic could become endemic?
I mean, me personally, just in discussions I've had doing podcast interviews and stuff, this is going to stick around. I think it's going to end up being something like the flu, just because we're not going to be able to hit that point. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, not just talk. I think most of the companies come out saying you're probably going to need a booster in a year, stuff like that. I think once again, though, it's a balancing what's the threat and how sick can you get? You know, are we dealing with what is basically going to be, I don't want to say it's not another flu strain because I don't want to, but, you know, just something that circulates and you have to deal with every winter and stuff like that. I mean, I think it's still out there, but I absolutely think we will be dealing with this in one way or another for the foreseeable future. I don't know that we'll be able to hit a point where it's eradicated completely.
And I'll say this with, I am not one of those people who thinks that we need to be panicking over these strains. I think that the way that we study strains in this country and even worldwide, we don't do it enough to really understand strains and everything. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm panicking over strains, but there is the very real possibility that if we don't vaccinate as many people as possible, then you do end up getting a strain that becomes more vaccine resistant. And then we're kind of back, you know, to not necessarily square one, but a major setback as far as reopening and getting the things that, you know, more life before this all started.
This is something we'll obviously be continuing to talk about as we go through the rest of the spring here. We're about to wrap this podcast up. Matt, what's on your radar as we head into this week?
Joe Biden's 100th day in office is Friday, I believe, and very interested in kind of taking stock of the new administration and what they've achieved, what they hadn't had, how it matches up with what was promised and against previous administrations, and why in the world did we start using 100 days as the benchmark? So that's something I'm working on for this week.
And Jim?
One thing I'm paying attention to, the congressional allocations for each state come out today. Pennsylvania is likely to lose one congressional seat. So the discussion may begin in earnest on who that seat might belong to or where that seat might be lost. General speculation is that it would be from Western PA because that's where the population is declining. But you know, it's easier to talk about that than it is to actually do it. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you as always coming on the podcast here. Matt, how can people check out what you're doing?
Follow me on Twitter at MattLeon1060.
And Jim?
At JMelwert on Twitter is probably the best way, Jay.
And I am Jay Scott Smith. I can be found at Jay Scott Smith, JayScott2SMITH. That's on Twitter and Instagram, Real Jay Scott Smith on Facebook. You can follow The Rundown on social media at The Rundown PHL. Again, The Rundown PHL. You can hear me every afternoon on KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, or you want to kick it old school and go 1060 AM. I'm on Philadelphia's Afternoon News, 3 p.m. and from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. So for Jim Melwert and Matt Leon, I'm Jay Scott Smith. I'd like to thank you for checking out today's edition of The Rundown. We'll be back at you very soon on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.